Oh, boys, we're here. It's Friday, and I have to admit, before we get started, I know I'm a little low energy, and usually I come in strong on a Friday, but I did this thing. I know we've talked about this before. On Thursdays, it just feels easier to stay up. It doesn't feel like a weeknight. So last
you
night,
look really, really
yeah.
tired.
Yeah, you do. You look drained,
you,
dude.
You kind of sound not great right now.
It's because I hopped out of bed about – I was on my phone, like, doing some stuff for work, but I hopped out of my bed about 5 minutes before – we hopped on here. So here we are. We're here. It's the Shipping Container talking to you on a Friday.
Were you guys up freaking late? With you on a Friday.
Yeah, come on, man.
Were you guys up late last night? Like, how'd you guys handle your Thursday night?
I wasn't up that late. I'm trying to think. So I have this thing where my wife says that I fall asleep within 5 minutes of hitting my pillow. So sometimes I don't even remember getting into bed. Like, I'll lay down, I'll put my phone to charge, all of a sudden I'm out, and then I wake up and it's 7 o'clock in the morning. So I think I went to bed at like maybe 11:30, but I wasn't doing anything special, just kind of laying around, you know, perusing Twitter and the normal things.
What is late? Because you're just saying you fell asleep late, but I'm wondering what late means to you. Because for me, like, late is like probably a lot different than you. Like, if I'm up yesterday, I probably went to sleep close to midnight. For me, that's pretty late. And that's like a Thursday thing. It's like, okay, it's Thursday.
Let the hair down a little bit.
Yeah. But I'm wondering what late is for you, because your late and my late seem to be different, because you have a totally different like energy about you today than I do. So I think we have different lates.
I think I turned off the PS2. Or no, PS3. What do I have? It's that early. It's that
PS4?
So. Yeah. No, I don't have PS4. I turned off my PS3 at about 1:45, I think.
Wow, so getting in that NCAA football late night, huh?
Dude, I think I'm already in season like in 2023 or something. I'm thinking I need to leave Ohio State. I think I've done all I can do there.
Why did you play as Ohio State?
Yeah.
Were they the best team in 2014?
The coaching carousel is crazy in that game. You don't have a lot of time. Like when you're selecting your options, like you got to decide quick. And a few seasons back.
Oh, you're playing as a coach?
Yeah. I'm doing like the whole recruiting thing, and like I'm
Are
a
you
coach.
Just copying what Big Cat did?
Yeah, but I'm not a live.
You know what? I'm here to
myself.
Say
just doing it for myself.
I'm here to say that I was prior to any of these people that are doing cool stuff with streaming, I was doing this way before. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I lived in Connecticut by myself, I had no friends, I had nobody, right? I would sit down and play NCAA 2013 or 2012, whatever I have, and do the same exact thing he's doing. Obviously, Twitch and, you know, the streaming and stuff wasn't around in 2016, or at least wasn't to the time or to the technology that we're doing it now. But I'm here to say I was first there. I just didn't get the credit for it.
What were you first at? Playing video games?
Exactly.
I was playing the video game.
I didn't want to be the guy that said it, but like, I'm pretty sure lots of people played video games.
No, not like me.
You created franchise mode? Is that what
I
you did?
Basically was one of the pioneers in making this something that you went back to and played, right? Because we were in 2017, 2018 at that time. Nobody was playing games from 2012. Like, that wasn't a thing. I was the first one to go back in time, back to the future, and play those video games. I just didn't record it, but I was through like a 30-year franchise mode in like 3 years.
Tony, did you hear the Eminem Kid Cudi song?
I haven't yet. I'm going to check it out. I'm not a huge Eminem guy.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Eminem guy. I'm going to listen to it. I like, obviously, Kid Cudi's, I think, made a really nice resurgence after Kids See Ghosts, and he came out with...
Doesn't seem like you like either of them too much. Wow.
No, I love Kid Cudi. I'm saying he had a big resurgence after Kids See Ghosts, because that was actually a decent album. The stuff he put out before wasn't that great, but... So I'm here to say it, and I'll take all the shit for it. I'm not a huge Eminem guy. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I didn't vibe with him.
Kid Cudi to me as a casual rap fan, because you're like really into the rap, and I like rap, and I like rap. But you know all like the rappers, and I know just like the famous ones. But Kid Cudi, like when that came out, Kids See Ghosts, like that was like this. I had never heard anything like that. Like, he's his own thing to me, like in the hip hop world. Kid Cudi has a sound that like I've always really liked Kid Cudi, even more than Eminem actually.
And you can hear a hum, and you know it's Kid Cudi, right? Like that, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, damn, Kid Cudi's on the song. I didn't even know. Yeah, he's, you know, a really interesting figure in the music community, in the hip hop community, because he was almost one of those guys that really was first to this mental health awakening, because he had a lot of demons that kind of almost derailed his music career in a sense, because there was, you know, obviously Man on the Moon, Man on the Moon 2, and he started coming out with Mr. like all of these different projects afterwards, and then he kind of fell off, and I think it was fame and money and prestige and all that stuff really gets to you. And he was one of the first guys coming out and saying, look guys, this isn't easy. Like being famous and being rich and being wanted 24/7 and having drugs available and alcohol available 24/7 isn't easy. Like I don't think anybody understands like what that life is until you finally break through and make it. And then just all the drugs are there and you're like, oh, well, I might as well do this. Right. And then it just tailspins your entire career. So it's been a really nice resurgence for him. I'm glad he's gotten the help he needs and definitely back on the right track.
Soundtrack to my life.
Classic, dude.
A banger.
There's his entire, that whole Man on the Moon, like mixtape and album were fire. Everything was awesome. It was basically the soundtrack to the senior year of high school for me. Like when that came out, it was like, all right, that's it. Like whatever this is, like this is some of the greatest stuff we've ever heard. Agreed. So I have a little, you know, soft spot in my heart for Kid Cudi on nostalgia purposes, but I'm going to listen to it and I'll check it out and I'll let you know
so
if he's back.
If I have a hard spot in my heart for something, is that like I don't like them? Like
you should
get
it checked out.
Yeah, right. Probably. I don't know if anything you should have anything hard in there.
Right.
What's your guys' dream job?
Ooh.
Wow.
I'm asking.
What made you go there?
Well, a couple of things. So I was thinking about this a couple of days ago and I wrote it down and we just haven't gotten to it for whatever reason. And then you were talking about how you think that you're done with your work at Ohio State. So I was like, you know, what's Chris's fictitious coach's dream job or just, you know, Chris Cody's dream job, you know, mm-hmm. growing up? Like, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I, you know, got into the media, I guess, right? Or like kind of growing up saw the mediums like this looks fun, this looks whatever, right? You know, someone that I always respected that I feel like doesn't get enough respect and get kind of gets mocked and whatever, Ryan Seacrest. I see Ryan Seacrest and I'm like, man, it's got to be great to be Ryan Seacrest, right? He hosts these shows, he has 1,000 things going on, radio, TV, New Year's Eve, this, that. Basically, there was a time in history when if you needed a host, it was Ryan Seacrest, right? But I've also realized I don't exactly have the charisma of a Ryan Seacrest. I don't have the Ryan Seacrest energy. I can't welcome America in from their couch and get them involved in whatever it is that I'm doing. I just don't have that je ne sais quoi, you know?
So well said.
I don't know what the next step is because I've kind of accepted at this point, I don't think that I'm going to be the next Ryan Seacrest, right? And every day that comes, I get older and it seems less and less likely that I'm going to be Ryan Seacrest and that, you know, the next American Idol or X Factor, you know, whatever it is going to come calling and be like, hey, we need you to be the guy that introduces the future talents of America to America. So I'm kind of stuck right now. I think it's – I don't know that it's time to scrap the plans, to rip up the blueprints. I don't know that it's that time yet, but I feel like we're getting close, right? So I'm wondering what your guys' maybe dream job is or like someone that you wanted to be that you thought this could be me and that, you know, how we're going to get there. How are the three of us going to get there?
I just had a thought for you before I get to my dream job. What about, because you're a big challenge guy, what about hosting the challenge?
Ooh, wow.
Like a nice middle ground of being a Ryan Seacrest, but being in a fun world. Like, you know.
So you're saying you want me? I mean, that's blasphemous, my friend.
What biker do they have hosting this season?
Like, how dare you? It's TJ Lavin, just like it has been for 20 of the 35 seasons. And you want me to go and take TJ Lavin out? Let's be real, okay? And I think, not to get too into the challenge, because I know a lot of people don't like the challenge. Trust me, I'm aware, guys. I know a lot of you don't like the challenge, okay? I feel like that job is already set up for Johnny Bananas to take when he retires from the challenge, right? Because he's been doing it forever. So we'll see. He's had a decent season.
once again, to take this away from our dream jobs background, like I saw, sorry, my daughter's in the background.
Nah.
I saw that they had a rating surge this season. I saw a big article yesterday. So I'm wondering if ESPN's number one challenge podcast is taking any credit for the rating surge this season.
Should be.
I mean, I'd say much like Tony invented video games, we invented the challenge, right?
Well, I don't know about video games. You know, going back to video games, I guess that's more of what I invented than anything.
Yeah.
But I can see Billy, Chris, and tell me if I'm wrong here. I may be way off. I can see Billy as the next iteration for Chris Harrison on The Bachelor, on The Bachelor series. Billy can be there very concerned. Oh, my God, are you okay? Like, here's the first, you know, set of ladies. Here's the first set of gentlemen that are coming out, and you're going to meet your husband or your wife tonight. Like, I see Billy in the Chris Harrison role very, very perfectly.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I would say that my biggest downfall, and I've noticed, is that just the way that I talk and my general tone, I've noticed, and it's not the case, but I've noticed it seems to lack sincerity, you know? Like... I tried, like, if I could be excited, I seem to struggle in going from kind of like monotone to excited to like concerned to happy. It all just seems
the range.
Like, yeah, there's not, it seems like range might be an issue with me, you know? So like, I could be like, oh my God, tell me more. And they're like, you're just being sarcastic. It's like, no, I'm actually interested. And it's just, you know, is there like a hosting coach that I could go to? Like, I know there's acting school, but like who?
Coach.
And then I wonder who could be maybe like my hosting mentor, right? Like, should I find a hosting mentor that teaches me like how to become, you know, the person that America can say, hey, that's the guy that, you know, he's just like me.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just Billy that like, I feel like Chris Harrison is more similar to you than you give off. He does kind of keep it even keel. Like, I think the only quality, do you love is really the only quality.
That's actually really good. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I wouldn't consider myself anti-love, right?
Though. We're talking about real love.
I'm trying to figure out if I love or if I just like love a lot, you know, because love is a strong word and I'm not sure if I'm ready to label my feelings for love as love, if that makes sense.
No, it does.
You know?
It
makes perfect sense. It's just a big commitment to say I love. So I'm trying to figure out, let me get back to you on that one. Let me think about if I'm ready to commit to love or if I just really like love and I don't want to take my feelings for love to the next level.
Tony, what's your dream job?
My dream job is basically taking Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives from Guy Fieri. Like, that's my dream job, is hosting,
is awesome. That's so good.
Hosting Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, where instead of, you know, the red Camaro, I do it in like a cool Mercedes Roadster, and I'm out there maybe not going to the dives as much, but like hitting the really nice spots, even though there's a lot of dives that have a lot of great food. Maybe taking it and graduating Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives to like a little bit more of another level, another echelon.
Another D in there, maybe. Diners, dives, and
something.
We'll figure it out.
Something good. But that would be my dream job. Just go around the country and around the world, really, to different places, try food, and talk in front of a camera. I felt like when I was trying to figure out like what I wanted to do, I was always drawn to like Billy and like all of us that are in this profession, like radio, TV, like that medium is really interesting to me. So the ability to do both things that I love is like be on camera and also talk and eat food. I feel like that is my dream job.
You know who I think has kind of a similar energy to me, just, and I'm not like a big, like, you know, like disciple of this person. So I haven't seen like a ton of his work, but some stuff that I've seen is a Chris Hardwick type, right? Like, he seems to have kind of a similar energy, but he's more well put together than I am. You know, like, he dresses all fancy schmancy. He's got some, you know, put together hair.
I mean, Billy, we can always fix the aesthetic, right? Like, the aesthetic is not the problem. We throw you in a nice Armani suit. We comb the hair back. We put you in some contacts.
Yeah.
And you're America's sweetheart. I mean, that's not the problem. All we got to do is work on your range and your tone. I feel like if you get a coach, you can become the next Chris Harrison. You can be the next Ryan Seacrest. Wow. By the way, little nugget on Ryan Seacrest, executive producer and creator of Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Oh, dude, yeah. he's got everything. Empire. Like everything. Everything. I forgot who it was. We got someone the other day. Man, who was? Oh, this is who it was. So we were doing a thing for the Challenge podcast, right? I think that's what it was. I don't know. We booked someone, right? And I was dealing with them, and it seemed like some like random, like just the show. I think it was for Cannonball, which is the Miz's new show, which is how we got him on the thing. And the company is a Seacrest production company. Hmm. And it's like a show that has absolutely like Ryan Seacrest is not there, has nothing to do with it. He's just built this empire where he's pumping out the Kardashian shows and then like every show on E. I think that I'm trying to figure out. I don't think it's very Cavallari. I don't think that that's a Ryan Seacrest production.
He hosted all the Disney Plus sing-alongs that I've been watching.
For like really?
Yeah, dude. He's just the everyman. Wow. He's everywhere.
He's not the everyman, though.
He's not. He's worth $500 million.
Exactly. I think that, I mean, look, I think that he sold his house to Ellen, right?
Yeah.
Ellen bought his house. And you're assuming when you're Ryan Seacrest, you're probably not downsizing, right? So what did he buy? Like, did he buy the Taj Mahal? Did he buy some ridiculous castle somewhere? Where does he live now if he decided, you know what? I've outgrown the house that Ellen is building up to. That seems crazy to me.
Who's next on the list to own that house? Like, it can't be Billy Gill or Chris Cody. Like,
oh, it's
the
not
next
even
person.
Close.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. Tony, have you worked on your catchphrase yet? For you know, Guy Fieri has. I'm Guy Fieri, and we're rolling out.
Oh
like,
yeah,
you
good.
Got like I'm Tony, and we're hungry. I don't know. I'm just.
Ooh trying. Yeah,
we gotta get yeah. there. We gotta figure it out.
Yeah, we gotta figure what that out. What that is.
Could you steal Tony the Tiger's line and just like you eat something like that's great?
Yes.
You'd probably get sued, I would assume.
Probably.
Right?
Probably. Yeah. I think Kellogg's has a really good handle on the it's great on TV or radio or anything like that.
I feel like that's such a generic statement though. Like I can't say that's great on
I would
if I no. but like I can say that's great. I just can't extend out great. Like if you take great past a certain length, then they're like, nope, that's ours.
Ooh, how about that's this? True. How about if you just kind of go with rhyming, but the same tone, right? See, I'm as we've discussed, I'm not the one to give you the tonal advice, right? Mm. But you just kind of say like, I'm Tony, I ate, right? And that's how you leave the restaurant every time.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. The thing is with Guy Fieri, he's got like a bunch of different things too, right? He's like always like those cheese fries are gangster, right? Wow. Like that's out of bounds.
Flavor
you know
town.
Like yeah I'm that this is the lake in Flavor Town. This melted cheese on these nachos is the stream of Flavor Town.
That's out of bounds. That's a big one for him. That's out of bounds.
He loves out of bounds. He loves you know all
so does
these
Flavor Town
things.
Flavor Town has like
he's the mayor
line.
Of Flavor Town.
I know but I'm saying like town. If you look at Flavor Town there's sidelines and you could go out of bounds in Flavor Town.
Yes. Mm. It's think of it as a parade. You know, okay. you have the barriers.
I was thinking of it as a town, but let's go to.
Well, no. Imagine Main Street in Walt Disney World, right?
Yeah.
You're walking down Main Street. They got the parade going on. Guy Fieri, the mayor of Flavor Town, is on his own float, doing his own thing. He's saying those cheese fries are gangster. That's out of bounds. And you know, you've got the barricades, and people are watching the parade go by. Mm. And obviously, you got like a nice wheel of cheese. There's a nice pastrami sandwich somewhere. There's spicy mustard drooping down somebody's cheek. Like that's what I imagine Flavor Town. So he's the mayor of Flavor Town. I need to be maybe like the municipal manager of Flavor Town.
Oh.
You just made it a flavor parade, though. I feel like Billy's right. This is supposed to be a town, and now we're
no.
Like,
but
now I'm envisioning a parade, and it's like.
I could see him
in a town.
Yeah, I could see him as the mayor of Flavor Town, much like the mayor in like of Whoville, right?
Right.
In, like,
exactly.
The Grinch. Like he looks the part. If there was a Flavor Town, he looks like he belongs as the mayor of Flavor Town. As the mayor of Whoville looks like he should be the mayor of Whoville with like kind of the hair that twirls around. Guys, by the way, Chris, we haven't gotten to your dream job yet, and I hope you do. You could start on that. I got something the other day in the mail that I love that I want to show you guys. You know, visually, it's not great. I'm going to put it on and I'm going to come back. So just give me 1 second and then you tell us about your dream job.
I'll throw it to you, Chris. Your dream job, what have you always wanted to do since you were a little kid?
Well, before I get to that, like now Billy started mentioning Whoville and we talking about Flavortown. Now I'm kind of going down the rabbit hole of what fictional town want to spend a weekend in. And I know there's more options than just Flavortown and Whoville. Those are two good options. If you told me I could
Halloween Town.
Oh my God! Like in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah,
wow, that would be.
Then there's scary, then there's what is it? Christmas Town.
That,
Thanksgiving
that,
Town.
Halloween Town. I don't know. I'm not going to any of those. Like get that. That movie freaked me out as a kid. Actually, if I'm being honest, like
you know, funny enough, I never saw it as a kid, and I saw it as an adult. I guess my mom was trying to like shield me from getting scared of it, so I never watched it, and I didn't know what I was missing. My wife was like, "Oh, I love Nightmare Before Christmas," and I'm like, "Okay, like I know I've heard of it, I've never seen it." So I watched it as an adult, and I was like, "Eh."
Billy, I noticed you don't have anything on yet. Maybe you're planning a big reveal here. What I was saying, I didn't get to my dream job yet because I was saying, what fictional town? We mentioned Whoville, Flavortown. If you could spend a weekend in any fictional town, what are you going with? Like, I feel like Flavortown's a pretty good option.
Yeah.
Whoville would be fun. Tony mentioned Halloween Land or whatever it's called from Nightmare Before Christmas, and that sounds terrifying. But what did you find out? What did you get what you were getting?
Yeah, I did. Is Candyland, does that count as a fictional town or is that more of a land? How about this? How about if like Disney World has like Adventure Island and they have like Tomorrowland and they have all of those, right? And then like
Frontierland
has like Seuss Landing and Jurassic Park and whatever it is that they call the other Comic Town or whatever they call the other ones. What if that counts as my town, but it grows beyond the scope of what we see now and it's actually like Frontierland? You step in and it just like once you put your step your foot in, the boundaries just expand and it becomes like a whole land and you'd see what actual frontier land. Does that count? I've complicated this game. Okay, look what I got. It looks like it looks like just a mask, right?
A themed mask.
It is from the Masked Singer. They sent me Masked Singer facial mask.
That monster?
This is Monster. So this is a T-Pain mask. And then here's a leopard mask. Yeah. This is a white tiger. This one was Gronk. See, and then there's also a kangaroo one.
Those could pass as Masked Singer masks and just animal masks.
Yeah. That's, yeah. They're not, they just kind of look like animal masks. And so a kind of a funny story about this. It came to my building and my building has a mail room and they like let you know when it is that you have a package, you have to go pick it up. So I got a call a couple days ago and they're like, "Hey, just wanted to apologize." And whenever the building calls, I like freak out because they never call. So I'm like, "Oh no, what happened?" So they're like, "Hey, you just wanted to apologize. You got a package, but we accidentally gave it to the wrong person and they opened it. So like we closed it, but just letting you know when you come down, like we're so sorry that we did that. We just sent it to the wrong unit. Just letting you know why it's open when you pick it up." I'm like, "Okay, no, fine, no problem," right? And I wasn't like, I had ordered something from Amazon, so I figured that's what it was, which is like a cable. So I'm like, "Okay, like they probably like saw cable," right? So then I go and I open this and I see what it is and I'm like, "Oh my God, these are awesome." And then I immediately thought, "Wow, whoever opened this must think that I'm like a really strange person because there's like all of these really strange like face masks. And like there's one that looks like a tiger's like teeth and then another one that looks like a leopard and there's this like kangaroo with a bedazzled like nose and this monster one just has like these two teeth and a bunch of like really furry looking. They're like they look kind of like the lower half of the person's face to cover your face, right? So like that was weird, right? But the mask that I was using was also dirty. I had to clean it. So like when I went down the next time, I'm wearing this monster mask. So the bottom half of my face is like this big fuzzy, like green blue thing with like these two teeth and like a purple mouth that's smiling. So I'm walking around the building with this, letting out my dog. And then I see like the board says I have a package. So I go to get the package and I know the guy that works there. So we're just having like this friendly conversation and my dog's there. They're talking to petting the dog. Right. And then I get back in the apartment and I see a mirror. I go, "Oh my God, like, I'm wearing half of a monster face. Like this person probably thinks that I'm crazy because I was just talking to them for 20 minutes with my mask on and all you could see was the bottom half of my face with this ridiculous smile thing going on."
So
the mask gives you the range that you're looking for with really? Like, because it shows that you're taking this pandemic seriously, but yet you have a sense of humor and you have a good fun side too. So it's a good range actually.
I don't want to be that guy the same way you didn't want to be that guy with me. I don't want to be that guy with you, but one, are you sure that the person didn't see some masks that they liked and took them? Two, are you not sure that the person put on some of the masks and then put them back in the box?
Two excellent questions, Anthony. So this is what happened. These masks came in pre-packaged like containers with plastic around them, right? Mm. So when I opened the package, one of them had been opened. So those masks are in the bag and they will be washed. Because I don't want to discard them entirely, but they will be thoroughly washed. And I opened another package and I'm using the ones in the other package. Two, me and my wife had that conversation and she came up with what I think is a great theory, which was, hey, they probably saw these, but at the same time, they're so distinct that even if they liked them, if they walked around the building with them, you would immediately know, hey, how does that person have that mask that I ordered, which I didn't order? Like, it just, I guess I've now been put on some PR list. So it was sent this way, which is like incredible. I love it. But yeah, that's the one thing about these things is that they're so like who would be, everybody's walking around with like solid color, like their favorite team or like just the general like cotton, whatever it is that they're made out of that you get like a Walgreens or CVS. And then these are just like so wild that I know immediately if like some random person was like just walking their dog or just like going outside and they have this like, oh, hey, the bottom half of your face is a white tiger.
Wait a second.
So did you come up with a dream job or not?
Yeah, Chris, yeah. We gave you enough time.
No, I know it. I got it. Okay. I feel confident about it. I want to be the chief creative officer at Walt Disney.
Wow.
Now,
company man.
This is inspired by, because I recently watched on the Disney Plus the documentary of the making of Frozen 2. And I know you're thinking, Chris, you have a 2-year-old, so that's why you enjoyed this. I'm telling you, if you enjoy the creative process, watch. It's like a full front to back on the making of this movie. Every step of the way, how difficult animation is nowadays. Well, how easy it is with computers. But it's just so, so interesting. I have not watched anything as interesting as this recently. So I recommend that. But Jennifer Lee, she is the writer and director of the Frozen series, but she's also this chief creative officer for Walt Disney Animation. Now, I want to go a step above that. I just want to be the chief creative officer in general for Walt Disney. She does animation. I kind of want to oversee the whole process.
And so what does that mean?
Yeah, I think there.
I think it has to do, I would assume that her chief creative officer role is just overseeing what gets greenlighted and what gets, you know, like I'm sure she sees a bunch of scripts, a bunch of ideas for Disney animation projects. And she,
wait,
it's like, I would assume.
So you don't want to actually create things. You want to have the creative people give you the ideas and you decide what works.
I want to be Jennifer Lee. I want to have the say. I want to give the green lights to everyone. And then I also want to work on my own projects. Like, she wrote and directed for all the Frozen stuff. So she has her hands in that film while still overseeing the overall So I kind of like that. I like having being able to just dictate what gets greenlit and what doesn't, and then I can also work on my side projects as they come along.
So I would think, without knowing the company structure, that to get to that point, you'd have to first have the Jennifer Lee role where you you'd have to work your way up. So you'd have to be like, I would think, like the creative type, and you work your way up, right?
Billy,
so
let's just. I'm one step ahead of you, by the way.
Okay.
Ever since I watched this documentary, I have been formulating animation ideas.
Awesome.
That I plan to eventually formulate in a cohesive email and send to Jennifer Lee as a pitch for my employment with her.
I would maybe skip that step, and before we get to you just straight up emailing Jennifer Lee these ideas, why don't we try to like massage them out a little, right? So like, let's say that we're the Bobs, me and Anthony right now, right? Okay. Bob Iger, Bob Chapek, we're the Bobs. So you're coming up to the Bobs and you are going to tell us why it is that you should have this job. So what ideas have you come up with? Give us one great animation thing that you've come up with, or one movie, since you want to do more than just animation. What movie? What's our next Frozen? And if, let me just stop here. If you say that your big move after Frozen 2 is Frozen 3, you're out of the room. All right. Yeah, yeah. It has to be bigger than let's just make Frozen 3. So wow us. What is going to be our next creation that we're going to build a parade down Main Street in Flavortown around?
Mm. You see, I've learned my lesson from giving away my good ideas. Like I gave away the Friends idea, and I feel like I've just kind of lost that one. Like I think that thing's in production right now, and they've just kept me out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I don't want to share the specific ideas. I definitely have a ton of them.
We're the Bobs. Just give us some of the ideas that you think, and then we'll say, like, you know what? There you go. Green light, Chris Cody. You're in charge of creative now.
Now, I know you guys both think that I'm being ridiculous, but this is actually not something that I'm joking about. Like, I genuinely am trying to think of a great idea for an animation movie that I can pitch Jennifer Lee. So I'm honestly not going to say what my, like, I do have, like, two or three ideas that I've started formulating. I'm honestly not going to say those. That's how ridiculous my dreams are.
But that's also someone that doesn't have any ideas would say, right? Like, that's the same thing that if you didn't have an idea, you'd say, hey, listen, I have it's top secret. I can't tell you what it is. Only I can know because I'm going to pitch it straight to Jennifer Lee. So can you give us maybe like a little scoop? Like maybe like, is it like animal based? Is it like princess fairy based? Is it like,
you know? All right, I'll give you one idea. I'll give you a general concept of one of my ideas.
Okay.
It's not based on, and my daughter is being very loud into it.
No, don't worry. Listen, you got to love kids. That's part of the deal when you work for Disney.
This movie that I'm thinking of creating is not based off human characters. It's like about an animal. Like, it's about an animal family.
Wow.
And I feel like the untapped market in the animal realm of animation is ducks.
Ducks.
Mm.
So we're going to have a duck.
So I've kind of been inspired by my dad raising his duck family.
Have you heard of Donald and Daisy?
Yeah.
It's about
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
No, but yeah.
Scrooge.
This is about a legitimate, like, just like a duck family in a neighborhood. And it's about their journey.
Hmm. So Chris is going to be. No, I can see it. I can see it. Chris is going to be in the. When you do the Oscars the animated short. That's where he's going to be. It's going to be like Chris Cody's Duck Family, but it's going to be a very artistic style, and he's going to win an Oscar for an animated short.
They do not play hockey, Billy, but we do pay an homage at some point. They do walk in a V shape. We do a flying V at some point, but there's no hockey involved.
Let me ask you a couple follow-ups if you would indulge
I've already
me.
Said way too much.
As one of the Bobs, do the ducks in your next franchise, do they face human problems or uniquely duck problems? Like, does the daddy duck, if there's a daddy duck or the mommy duck or the kid ducks, do the ducks dress up to go to work? Do the ducks have briefcases? Or is this like strictly ducks doing duck things and no human qualities whatsoever?
I mean, you know, we haven't really gone down the rabbit holes of like character, you know, really taking these characters to the next level. So I don't really know all the answers to that question. But
so
I
you
know
just
that,
saw ducks.
No, but like, no, but we want it to be based. Like, I want you to like, I want people to leave the theater and be like, oh, I have that duck family. That duck family lives outside my house. Like, I just want, it's going to be just kind of like what, maybe kids are thinking that duck life is like, and that's what we're going to try to bring to life.
So will the ducks be interacting with humans, and we're just going to see things from like a duck? Like, okay, for example, like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Is that what this is, how you envision this, where we will see the world through, instead of like kids that were shrunk and they're seeing like, oh my God, look at the parents. Look at how big these blades of grass are. Look at this ant. We're going to be seeing like kind of the world from a duck's perspective, or is this going to be more of like an animated thing?
I do want to bring both perspectives in, because I see the Toy Story franchise, and I think that they focus too much on the toys. I would have liked more of about Andy. You know, I feel like the humans are such an ancillary character.
Well,
in Toy Story, I want to bring the humans a little more to life than Toy Story did. Like, not as much. I don't want it to be 50-50. But I want them to be more, I want to get more of the feel of the humans than you do in Toy Story.
Here's the interesting thing about Toy Story, right? Because you're right in a sense. We knew pretty much nothing about Andy, right? But we learned a lot about Sid the neighbor,
because
he was the villain. We learned a lot about, in Toy Story 2 or 3, I don't remember, the guy that bought the toys and refurbished the toys. Was it Al from Al's Toy Barn, or is that another thing?
I believe so.
We learned a lot about him. But we never really got to know Andy. So you want to have kind of like a duck child relationship there, where we'll see things from the perspective of the child that's taken on this duck family, but also things from the perspective of the duck.
I want to see how the kids react to the duck. I want to try to tackle that. I want to like see the parents' perspective on the duck. I want to touch it all.
And are you thinking
without this, touching anything?
Are you thinking that this is going to be like an animated cartoon thing, or like a CGI, or like a Toy Story kind of like computer generated?
Like, yeah, this has got Frozen and like a Frozen feel to it. I'm telling you, I'm so inspired by this Frozen. I want to work with all the animators that I saw in this doc. I'm telling you, you got to watch this documentary. You guys are both in the creative process. Telling you, it's a 6-part, like 45 minutes each episode. It's like front to back, the entire process of making it. It is so interesting, legitimately.
And you want this to be a movie?
Yes, it will eventually be a movie. Anthony might be right. The first one I make might be a short. My daughter's crying.
It's fine.
Part of the creative process, right? We all cry a little bit. We all cry a little bit.
Put that into your work.
Yeah.
Make it real.
Emotion is important, especially if you want to connect with kids. They feel that emotion, you know?
And that's what I'm lacking. That's why I can't be the next Chris Harrison at the moment. But I'm going to work on feeling emotion. Guys, update. I think I love.
Yes.